The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. And before I get to the local stuff, I do have something that I need to admit to you. I'm not proud of this.
Space.
I'm not embarrassed of it. My friends just could not figure me out, though, because all my buddies, when I was a kid, they loved Star Trek. Oh, my goodness, they loved Star Trek.
To explore.
I not only have never seen an episode of Star Trek, I've never seen any of the Star Trek movies. I have never read a science fiction book. I've never watched a science fiction TV show or movie. Science fiction, from the time I was a tiny little kid, had absolutely zero appeal to me. And I have no idea why. My friends took me to see Star Wars when it opened, downtown Seattle, the UA 70 and 150, 1977, I think. I made it about 5 minutes, and then I fell sound asleep for the rest of the movie. I've never seen or read any sci-fi in my entire life. And as I said, I'm not proud of it. I'm not embarrassed at it. It's just the way I'm wired a little differently that way. But anyway, so on Star Trek, Captain Kirk, William Shatner, what a career he's had. I mean, he's kept himself in the spotlight and somewhat relevant for 55 years. And he's 90 years old now. So he went up in Jeff Bezos' rocket ship this morning and into space. The oldest person ever to go into space, William Shatner. And I have to tell you, when he came down, and because I do, even though I'm not a sci-fi fan, I love the space launches. And when I was a kid, watching the Apollo landings, I love the reality of science. I like science reality, just not science fiction. But I wanted to watch the space takeoff and landing this morning. And I will tell you how emotional William Shatner was when he got out of the capsule. I thought it was beautiful because this obviously had a tremendous emotional impact on the man.
Soft blue. Look at the beauty of that color. And it's so thin. And you're through it in an instant. It's what a... I'll think of it. Is it a mile?
No, I mean, it's, I mean, it depends on how you measure because it thins out, like maybe 50 miles.
But you're going 2,000 miles an hour. So you're through 50 miles at whatever the mathematics
fast.
Was.
Yeah,
really you know, fast. It's like a beat and a beat, and suddenly you're through the blue.
So he's talking about escaping our atmosphere and then being in the darkness of low-orbit space. These are low-orbit crafts. But then looking down and seeing the Earth from that perspective, and man, he was fired up about this. And just the fact that having that much passion at age 90 for something is, and at any age, that's one of the problems in life. People go through life without passion, without things that just get them tingly.
And you're into black, and you're into, you know, it's mysterious and galaxies and things, but what you see is black. And what you see down there is light, and that's the difference. And not to have this, you have done something. I mean, whatever those other guys are doing, what isn't, they don't, I don't know about that. What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary.
He's crying, and Jeff Bezos is hugging him, and it's obvious that this is something. You know, some people just dismiss it as a billionaire's play toy because it's Bezos and it's Richard Branson, it's all these very rich guys who are in a space race, a private space race. But you know, I've talked to astronauts who have gone into space, and they all talk about this incredible, majestic, spiritual feeling that overwhelms them when they look down at Earth from space. And I do think that that's something that's very cool.
I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it. It's so... so much larger than me and life. And it hasn't got anything to do with the little green planet, the blue orb. And the, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the enormity and the quickness and the suddenness of life and death. And the, oh, my God. It's something to be.
It's so beautiful.
Beautiful, yes, beautiful in its way, but...
No, I mean your words.
Oh, my words.
That's just amazing.
I don't know. I can't even begin to express what I what I would love to do is to communicate as much as possible the jeopardy, the moment you see how the vulnerability of everything. It's so small. This air, which is keeping us alive, is thinner than your skin. It's a sliver. It's immeasurably small when you think in terms of the universe.
A lot of things struck me. The eloquence with which he spoke. And then also, at age 90, he does not sound like he's 90 years old, either in the timbre of his voice and then the eloquence of his words. And I want to play for you. I know this is long, but I thought this was really cool. And I want to play for you because he was making some connections between life and death when he was out there, too.
It's negligible, this air. Mars doesn't have it.
Right there.
Nothing. I mean, this, and when you think of weight, carbon dioxide change to oxygen, and what is it, 20% or something, that level that sustains our life. It's so thin to dirty it. I mean, that's another whole
subject. And you shoot through, what you were saying about shooting through it so fast.
So quickly, 50 miles.
And you're just in blackness.
You're in death.
Yeah.
The moment.
This is life.
This is life, and that's death. And it's in an instant, you go, whoa, that's death. That's what I saw.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Wow. I am overwhelmed. I have no idea.
I thought that was cool. And it's also, I'll admit, I just had a milestone birthday last week. And you start thinking about death. It's pretty clear that you have fewer years in front of you than behind you. And, as I've said, I'm not afraid of death because of my faith. I think that this is just the most temporary of existence on this earth. But when he was saying that, being on the earth is life, and then there's the blackness of space, and that's death. And just the fact that that is what popped into his mind as he was experiencing that. I thought that was very cool. It was very, I love watching. I mean, I love, first of all, experiencing things that just are so inspiring and fill you with such, when you have so much passion, you're alive. And that can be in joy, it can be grief, but when you're just filled with so much emotion, you know that you're alive. And I love hearing people who express that level of passion, because too many people flatline their way through this life. And that is no way to live. All right. And Nicole, before I get out of this whole segment of the big lead, could you load one more thing for me? William Shatner's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Okay.
Have you ever heard it?
It sounds familiar. I don't remember if I've heard it.
Okay. Oh, you'd remember if you heard it. I'd like to bump out of the big lead with that. But yeah, so if you can get Shatner's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I'd very much appreciate that. Okay, with all that as mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
Your read on the big lead.
Yes, I got a letter from somebody who would like to stay anonymous. because we were on the air yesterday when Boeing announced the vaccine mandate. By December 8th, Boeing workers must be vaccinated or they will be fired. And that's because Joe Biden says every federal contractor must be vaccinated. Dory, my name is, I'm not going to say his name. I work for Boeing. Today is a dark day. I'm going to be fired on December 8th. After 11 years at a job I love, my wife and I had COVID-19 last year, and she still suffers from long-haul syndrome. She had a heart condition before COVID called inappropriate sinus tachycardia. COVID also gave her myocarditis, which added insult to injury. She suffered a heart attack that destroyed her lower left ventricle. All of this year. This week, she was just diagnosed with stage 3 congestive heart failure. We both know we are on borrowed time. This summer, we just purchased our dream home out on the Key Peninsula. My wife works for the state at the prison. She caved to the mandate against her better judgment to save her job. She got the Johnson & Johnson and put her back in the hospital. She will not get a booster. She said she will get fired before that happens. I'm a veteran. Served with the 82nd Airborne. This is not the America I fought for, Dory. I live a life of peace, but my heart is filling with hatred. I have serious convictions over this vaccine. My wife says she doesn't want me to take it. Nobody is following the actual science. If natural immunity is better than the vaccine, what is in that shot that the government wants every man, woman, and child to have? My gut and heart tell me to stay away from it. I'm under extreme duress. Lose absolutely everything I've ever worked hard for, or go against my moral conviction and keep my job and livelihood. I know it won't be long before my wife will probably not be able to work anymore, which will leave us uninsured, broke, and most likely homeless. My faith is telling me God will provide. This is a huge leap into I don't know what. Is this jab the start of something else? I'm fed up with all the lies and fake news and everything else going on in this country. Every so often, the tree of liberty needs to be watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots. God bless. I have said that I'm shocked at what has happened to our country in very rapid time. You know, from the just absolute hatred of police officers to government officials cheering the burning down of so many cities or big chunks of cities last year. Seattle has a city attorney candidate who hates police officers, loves people who commit arson, cheers for them on Twitter, and is one of the favorites for the city attorney. I mean, it's crazy. And then the freedoms that, yes, we have lost. It's been very incremental. But it's quite clear. And I'm very, very blessed because I don't think or have a worldview that is compatible with cancel culture. And look, it almost got me a year ago, cancel culture. But I also know that there are a lot of people who share these feelings because, did I mention we're the highest rated local news talk show in the United States of America? I mean, this is home base for a lot of people who feel the same way. And my hope, my goal is that we will be a force and we will start to wrest back some control over our country and our lives and our sovereignty and getting smaller government instead of an overwhelming government that wants to control us from the cradle to the grave. And then, as I've said, I have seen data that has convinced me that the vaccine is a good thing for most people. But I also do not ignore the fact that, you know, three people at Moderna have jumped into the Forbes richest 400. They're all billionaires now. And the only way that they can maintain it is if they keep the stock price up. Oh, what did I tell you? No, I haven't told you this yet. One way that they're keeping the stock price up is a zoo just became the first to vaccinate their great apes. Now, is there anything, any data that suggests that apes are getting COVID? No. No, but if we can just go out to the zoos and say, well, do you love your animals or don't you? Well, then you have another. You know, right now, we've got the 12-year-olds. 12 to 17 have been approved for the vaccine. And then, you know, they're trying to get it down to 5-year-olds because they got to get that market share going. And now the great apes are getting the vaccine. Here, CBS did a thing on it.
A group of great apes in San Diego have made history as the first animals to receive the COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. According to a wildlife health officer, the decision to administer the vaccines came after 8 gorillas at the San Diego Zoo became the first great apes in the world to contract COVID. The apes are expected to be tested to see whether they develop antibodies, which would indicate that the vaccine is working. And I know some people are saying they're animals, actual humans need this vaccine. You know what? They're endangered. So, and we could actually sort of learn a lot about how the vaccine works as well.
What? They told us the vaccine's safe. Now we have to inject apes so we can learn about the vaccine? I thought they knew everything we needed to know. Maybe we can learn something. What have we been jabbing ourselves with if we still don't know stuff and now we got to watch the apes to see how they handle it? They didn't tell him which vax they gave him, man. I hope they didn't give him the Moderna because those apes are going to get knocked out when they get their second shot like I was. My goodness gracious. All right, and let's see here. Before I go, so had you ever heard this before, Nicole? Was this new to you?
Again, I'm not really sure. It sounds familiar, but no, I guess not.
Okay, here's how you stayed relevant after Star Trek, and now William Shatner today went into space. But here's the crooner, William Shatner. Forward a little bit.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you. You answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Oh, I forgot how great this is. Every time I listen to it, it's solid gold. All right, that's your big lead this hour. We're going to check the news for you. And then, oh, coming up next, what the government's telling us about this supply crisis? Just absolute nonsense. Details right after the news as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Well, we have some breaking news just coming into us here at the Dory Monson Show, and this is courtesy of our friend Brandy Cruz at Fox 13 News. So we've been telling you about the Seattle City Attorney candidate named Nicole Thomas Kennedy. She has sent some absolutely disgusting, vile tweets calling police officers pigs and serial killers. She celebrates arson and property destruction. And that's why two Democratic governors, Gary Locke and Christine Gregoire, they both endorsed Nicole Thomas Kennedy's opponent because they know that Nicole Thomas Kennedy will lead to the destruction of Seattle. But here are some of the things Nicole Thomas Kennedy has tweeted. This is not new. Wait till you get to the breaking news part of this. But when the children's jail was set on fire, yay! Thank you to the heroes that set the children's jail on fire. Property destruction is a moral imperative. Somebody wants to be the Seattle City Attorney. But the breaking news that Brandy has just uncovered is that Nicole Thomas Kennedy's campaign manager is even worse. Her name is Ty Reed. And throughout the last year and a half, she has sent some really disturbing, as Brandy describes it. While Thomas Kennedy's tweets were filled with hate, her campaign manager's 2020 tweets are filled with violence. And she writes out all of the entire words. I, of course, have to abbreviate words that are not allowed on radio. But speaking of the mayor, that B word, Mayor Durkin, is going to get her ass beat one day. She wrote on June 3rd, 2020. Seattle police sent out an alert that there had been a shooting down near Seward Park on October 2nd of last year. Nicole Thomas Kennedy's campaign manager, Ty Reid, tweeted, "Prayers the victim is a KKK cop." Praying there was a cop who was shot. She said that then presidential candidate Joe Biden should die following a speech on race and social justice. The theater never effing matters. All his pretty words aren't stopping the police from beating our asses, so the unity BS is wasted breath, hopefully his last. So she was rooting for the death of Joe Biden last year. You want to hear more? From the campaign manager of a Seattle City attorney candidate? On Carmen Best, former Seattle police chief. This is exactly the job of Carmen Best. She will shuck and jive. Oh, and by the way, this is a black woman who's writing this. She will shuck and jive herself into a mansion just like every other Uncle Tom MF-er benefiting off the suffering of black folks. Take off that badge and see how important your life is then, chief. Well, that's a disturbed person. It's a very disturbed person. So this is the team that wants to be the next Seattle City attorney. Nicole Thomas Kennedy has already announced that she would eliminate all misdemeanor crimes, which is all Seattle City Attorney's Office deals with, meaning shoplifting, home break-ins, car prowls, simple assaults. They would all become de facto legal in Seattle. I mean, think about how bizarre that is. You know, when I talk about how we have changed over the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, this woman has a chance of winning. She might even be the favorite. And if she wins, shoplifting and breaking into homes would be de facto legalized in Seattle. Try to, in your way back machine, try to go back in your mind 20 or 30 years and think if you heard those words and somebody said, yeah, in just a few years, shoplifting and breaking into homes will be legal in Seattle. You would have thought, well, no, that's never going to happen. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Huh. Who was saying that 20 years ago? Oh, yeah, I was. 20 years, more than 20, 22 years ago, 1999. I said, the path we're on, we will eventually have crime legalized in Seattle. 22 years ago. We saw it coming. We knew the template that was being put into motion back then to try to destroy us from within, to try to impose Marxism. And that remains the goal. But, man, these are some vile, sick people. Man, Nicole Thomas Kennedy and her campaign manager. That is some nasty stuff. Ty Reed is the campaign manager's name. So I guess that's where, and that's choice. And the opponent is a woman named Ann Davison, who would actually enforce laws and put criminals in jail? What? Put criminals in jail? That sounds impossible. So that's the choice. This is an important choice ahead for this city. And this is going to determine survival or destruction. And you think that sounds like hyperbole? I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here in a few years to do my I told you so. If the wrong person gets elected to that job. Because that is crazy. We've got some crazy people working this right now. Okay, then we have the national crisis. And it is a crisis level, this shipping shortage. We've got in Puget Sound right now, off of Holmes Harbor, Whidbey, Saratoga Passage, in Elliott Bay, there are dozens of cruise ships with tens of thousands of containers that need to be unloaded in the ports. And they're just sitting out there anchored, some of them for nearly a month now, because there's been a slowdown in the ports. And part of it is the longshoremen. They don't, a lot of them don't want to get vaccinated. And they're making a statement. They say that there's a truck driver shortage. And the truck drivers who do incredible work for not enough money, and they make $50,000, $60,000, as we confirmed with a lot of our listeners who drive truck. And now we've got diesel fuel. It's so expensive. One truck driver who texted me earlier today said it cost him $700 to fill his two tanks, and he might have to just park his truck. And this all traces back to Joe Biden, who doesn't know how to manage any kind of a crisis. Our southern border is wide open. Barack Obama says it's unsustainable. Afghanistan was one of the great military and foreign policy disasters in American history. Gas hit a 7-year high yesterday. Oil hit a 7-year high today. Oil yesterday, natural gas today. 7-year highs. Inflation is at a 13-year high at well over 5%. So if a husband and wife each make $75,000, inflation is an insidious tax. And if you each make $75,000, you have just lost $7,500 because of how much more you have to spend on buying stuff right now. We have the shipping crisis. We have nothing but disasters under Joe Biden. And then waiting in the wings is Kamala Harris, who there's zero evidence that that would be any better. There's going to be a long next 3 years in America. And the thing is, you know, Joe Biden's worse than Jimmy Carter, because Joe Biden, he just started the destruction right off the bat when he took away our energy independence and now has to beg OPEC to increase production. But Jimmy Carter, he really didn't tank until his third year when he started talking about the malaise in America. And his first 2 years were decent. But Joe Biden, man, day one, he started the destruction of America. It's been efficient. Awesome audio is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And this is the time of day when we like to reflect back and count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
Huge upset in college football last weekend. Alabama lost to an unranked opponent for the first time in 100 games. They'd won 100 straight against unranked opponents. But Texas A&M kicked a field goal at the final gun to beat them. And I admire what Nick Saban's built at Alabama, but I just was sent this audio today. Their radio announcers are such babies, they wouldn't even, on the radio, they're our eyes. They wouldn't even talk as A&M made the winning kick.
What happens?
They sat silently for 30 seconds. And then here's what he finally said.
$250,000 because everybody who does not have a seat and those who did have now flooded the field.
All he talked about was, oh, Texas A&M's going to be fined $250,000 because they ran on the field. What a baby that radio announcer is. The vax mandate. There is one in Los Angeles, but the L.A. County Sheriff is not going to enforce it. And he explained why.
I know my employees very well, and I cannot afford to lose 5 to 10% of my employees overnight who will react to someone trying to impose something. And remember, I believe in the vaccine. I believe in the science. But if someone else who is an employee does not believe in that, who am I to impose on them my belief system? And they're going to vote with their feet. I have people near retirement can just simply just walk away. No harm, no foul. I have other people can claim workers' comp injuries, call in sick. And then all of a sudden, we're dealing with a homelessness and a homicide surge that is of gargantuan proportions. And I have a board of supervisors who are embracing this woke alternate universe where somehow they just, you know, send off edicts like Moses coming down from the mountains and everybody's going to snap to attention and make them happen. I have to deal in reality. And that is a very dangerous and nonsensical mandate.
Hey, Mitzi, are you listening? Or are you still mitzing in action? And the sheriff in L.A., he's not surprised that leaders don't care if it's going to make the public less safe.
Well, remember, this is the same county that's sitting on a $2 billion surplus while they're defunding only one department, law enforcement, as we have a 54% surge in homicides. We have a quarter of the nation's homeless in our county, and more are coming. And they have no plan for that, except the only thing they can seem to agree on, let's keep defunding law enforcement and see how it works out. Well, that's just woke privilege speaking, really, because the people that are going to be harmed by that are the people that are expecting someone to show up when there's a 911 call and there's no one there to either answer the call, go to the call, investigate the crime, and actually hold people in jail when we're being defunded. Heck, they want to close the nation's largest jail with no alternative and just have everybody just, I guess, walk away.
There are still people in politics who have some common sense. All right, and then finally in our awesome audio, DC Comics made some big headlines this week when they announced that the new Superman will be bisexual. The new Superman, apparently, I'm not a big Superman fan either, but the new Superman is the son of Clark Kent and Lois Lane, and he's going to be bisexual. Dean Cain played Superman in the TV series and on Fox. He said, you know, because everybody says, oh, that's so bold. That's so gutsy what DC Comics is doing. He says, that's not bold.
Look, it's hard for me to keep track of all the different Superman and the different worlds and adventures that he has in the comics. But what from I can gather, it's Lois and Clark's son, John. And I don't think they said it's bold and it's a bold new direction. I say they're bandwagoning. You know, a Robin of Batman, a Robin, as you mentioned, just came out as bi or gay recently. And honestly, who's really shocked about that one? I had some thoughts about that a long time ago. But the new Captain America is gay. My daughter in Supergirl, where I played the father, she was gay. So I don't think it's bold or brave or some crazy new direction. If they had done this 20 years ago, perhaps that would have been bold and brave. But brave would be having him, you know, fighting for the rights of gay people in Iran, where they'll throw you off a building for the offense of being gay. They're talking about him fighting, you know, real world problems like climate change, the deportation of refugees, and he'll be dating a hacktivist, whatever a hacktivist is. I don't know. But, you know, why don't they have him fight the injustices that created the refugees that whose deportation he's protesting? That would be brave. I'd read that. Or fighting for the rights of women to attend school and have the ability to work and live, and boys not to be raped by men under the new warm and fuzzy Taliban. That would be brave. There's real evil in this world today, real corruption and government overreach, plenty of things to fight against, human trafficking, real actual slavery going on. It'd be brave to tackle those issues, shine a light on those issues. As far as, you know, I'd like to see the character doing that. I would read that comic. This one, I don't think I'll be reading. I could just watch CNN or MSNBC to get this information.
Dean Cain, Superman on the Bi Superman. Okay, I got to get out of here. The Tom and Curly Show's coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Hi, noon.